Good afternoon. It's 5 o'clock on Tuesday, December the 7th, on a bleak midwinter's day in the UK. It's been lashing it down with rain in London, and I'm not sure it's been snowing in Edinburgh, but it's certainly been snowing just outside. My guest this week, and you are asking the audience to forgive us in advance for a wee bit of slang that may creep in. Translations will be available separately. You may contact either of us. My guest this week is Sathpal Singh. He's not from Edinburgh. He's from Leith. That's an important distinction to make if you're from Edinburgh. But I have no idea why he supports Hearts if he's from Leith. But I'm getting way too local with this one. And speaking as a hippie, I will actually forgive him this a little bit. Anyway, we just connected very recently through him discovering this podcast and being a mutual friend of Alex Barker, who was my last guest. So we've just chatted for a few minutes before coming on air. And welcome, Sath. Nice to see you and to listen to what's on your mind. Tell us a bit about yourself first, though.
Yeah, let's do that. No, thanks for the intro. Great to be here. And as we were chatting, I do love a conversation. I'm not quite sure where this one's going to go. But looking forward to it. And I won't hold it against you that you're a hippie. So we're all good. We're all good.
That's fine.
Intro, where would I go with the intro? I'm Edinburgh born, Edinburgh based. Dropping Leith, I don't live there now. I guess professionally, my background is in tech.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I've been in the industry over 20 years. You wouldn't think you'd look at me. That's my joke, by the way. I just kind of went from there, really. And I studied computer science at Edinburgh Uni some years ago. I wasn't massively into computers, I wouldn't have said at the time. I seemed to kind of, like the maths more, but I didn't want to do that professionally. And then I got my first job as a software engineer and really took it from there. You know, I realised early on that I wasn't somebody who wanted to kind of be, head in the code all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was much more around conversations, talking to people, trying to understand, what was going on, get to the nub of the problem, understand why. And that really led me into, tech lead roles, management leadership, and that's kind of where I've been operating for the last 15 years or so. But I'm one of these odd sort of techies, I guess. People sometimes find it hard to believe I'm a techie. I've got a technical background because I've got a very diverse skill set. And, we might go on to explore that, Technical is my background, but, a lot of coaching, I've got some background in marketing. Do some visualization work. I'm a kind of visual thinker, a whole bunch of other things that you're welcome to probe over the course of this 30 minutes. But that's probably the short version.
But it's that bit intrigues me because we both went to university in Edinburgh. I went to the other university, Heriot-Watt, and I did a joint degree in accountancy and computer science. This is back in the 80s, and I could regale you with stories of punch cards and paper tape and stuff. But I learned also similarly quite quickly. I understood the basics of coding and logic, et cetera, but then wasn't particularly interested in that side of it, but more in what it could create. And there's, talking to somebody the other day, there's all this language around roles. And I know IBM has some of this with words like engineers and architects. And they're saying, I'm not sure I want to, somebody, a youngster talked to me and just said, look, I'm good at maths, but I don't want to be an accountant and I don't want to do pure maths. And I don't want to be an engineer. But I quite like the idea of all this stuff that's happening in tech and I like data for solving problems. So it's more of an economist type mindset he has. And I said, but it was put off by depth of coding, which of course you do need to get into to some level.
Yeah.
I did just mention this idea of an engineer solves a problem structurally, for example, and an architect, because I'm very visual, and I was recently in Scotland for the first time in 18 months and managed to go to Hill House in Helensburgh, which I love, which is Charles Rennie Mackintosh built house. But an architect, the great thing about it is you can picture that he talked to the family and said, this is the way you want to live. He said, okay, I'll design something for that solves stuff that you might not even know you need. But the minute you walk in there, you can imagine they walked in there and went, this is our home. And I guess I'm just riffing a bit. That's just an optimist thing. So given that you've got that varied background, this might be something, some thoughts from you could be pointed towards people who are going, well, what would a career in tech look like? And, you know, one of the big things now is data analysis. I mean, that's a huge field, you know? So.
Yeah, so that's a good point. So I think the point is, you know, I was a software engineer for about maybe 12 years, various technologies. I started on something called Perl, which a lot of the, you know, the younger generations, you say that to them and they look at you blankly.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what it is, and sometimes that's quite a nice feeling. but I think you're right. So I think for me, it was a lot of it was around, you know, the impact of technology. So, you know, I'm very active in, you know, the British Computer Society. They're the industry body for IT. And, you know, so I went from, you know, a student member of theirs right through to a fellow. And very recently, I did a talk as part of these kind of webinars that they now do for newer members. And it's amazing to talk about your journey and reflect on your journey. And I think, you know, what I'm really intrigued by at the moment a lot is the journey, right? Not destination, because we don't often have one. It's just, you know, where might we go? And, you know, a friend of mine and I, we were talking recently about, you know, the hero's journey. So, you know, the kind of Joseph Campbell kind of, you know, the one that he's essentially popularized. And I love that stuff. You know, you kind of start somewhere, but you know, you kind of maneuver and, you know, hit your challenges and then you meet people along the way. And it's those people that help shape your journey and who influences you, who inspires you, you know, and you end up often doing things that you didn't expect to do. Or, you know, you meet great people who encourage you or help you realize that you have just almost superpowers that you didn't realize you had. And I feel like I've kind of been on that sort of journey. And where I find myself now, it's not, you know, if you'd said to me 25 years ago, Sath, you know, you'll be doing this, that, and t'other, I would have said, it's gone a bit, Tom, no chance. I don't have any of those skills. I don't know the first thing about doing those things, but the world's changed so much, you know, and the pace of things and the technology as an enabler has really allowed us to I guess, tap into talents, really, and meet people and go on an exploratory journey. And that's the stuff.
Well, I'm going to sound like a grumpy parent. I'm a parent of three adult boys.
Likewise.
The youngest one is about to go to uni this year, so I'm helping him, you know, okay, what do you want to do? And when his son drafted his personal statement, he says, I want to get into data analysis. I went, oh, never knew that. Great. But the first thing he said was 12 years as a software engineer. So, you know, I do think the grumpy parent bit is there is an element of putting in the yards to build any skill set for a number of years. But the second piece is the speed of change, right? Everything's happening so fast. I guess what occurs to me is that, so people haven't, listening to this aren't aware of it. Joseph Campbell was a scriptwriter in Hollywood and he wrote a circular thing called A Hero's Journey. It massively influenced George Lucas and the Star Wars movies. And pretty much every quest type movie is based on that. And another piece for movie geeks is Dune. The movie came out a couple of months ago. Now, when I was a teenager, it was one of my favorite books. And it was written in the 60s. I know I'm not that old. I read it in the late 70s. But of course, that book was a massive influence on George Lucas too. So if you watch Dune, and you just look at any blog on the hero's journey, it's very cool. And I think what occurs to me in sort of computer programmers speak, for a moment is the speed of change, the journey, is the idea of it being iterative.
Yes.
Now in a movie, you can only have one hero's journey, but it feels like we go on maybe so many of these journeys with challenges, setbacks, people we meet help us along the way, enablers such as technology. Yep. It sounds like you're at an interesting spot. You were just saying you're about to start a podcast, for example. That might not be something you conceived a little while ago, you know?
No, it happened very randomly, to be honest. So again, I find myself very active in the, you know, the Agile community, now globally, for the last few years. And again, you know, you meet some incredible people and you get inspired, but the point you've made, you know, that was Joseph Campbell that wrote what's his book called? The Hero with 1,000 Faces. So we kind of, you know, we evolve, don't we? We transform, we kind of emerge. And I think that's what's happened. So, you know, this podcast launch was a friend of mine and I riffing, just like we're doing now, chatting away. I was literally just about to do a talk. He was hosting me. we sort of collaborate quite closely together on various things across the Agile landscape. And then another friend of ours who was on the call with us just said, well, listening to you two just chatting naturally is really entertaining. You should do a podcast. And that's how the podcast was born. And the podcast's about communities, making communities, and we're passionate about the role and the power of communities. And a lot of the work I've done over the last few years has been in building and nurturing communities and hosting a lot of events, seeing these grow into global communities, really, as a, I guess, as a consequence of the global pandemic.
So I'm intrigued because the, one of the things you said was your work with the British, your engagement with the British Community Computer Society, of which you're now a fellow, it was all about, you said impact on society was what resonated when I was listening. And then you're talking about making communities and technology as an enabler. Edinburgh, you know, I'm from Edinburgh, and pre-pandemic I was up there quite a lot, and there's a lot of really cool community stuff goes on up there. I'd sort of name check young Bruce Walker, and he is young, and FutureX and that kind of stuff is very cool. And there's so many cool things going. But what are you seeing as the opportunities to, you know, where you are focusing or want to focus to make a difference in communities?
Great question. So I guess what's happened for me is my sort of passion for communities kind of happened a bit randomly. And then I started to see, for me, really, it's the fact that communities are the coming together of people with shared passions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And shared sort of, they've got, yeah, that they've got things that they've got in common, but they also have shared passions and things that they all collectively care about. So in my workplace, for example, in the enterprise I'm in, you have lots of communities of practice. So they focus on the practice of stuff. Mm-hmm. In a lot of the cases, it's, you know, various technical disciplines, but I think the power of community is a lot broader than that. So the reason for doing this podcast is to explore that globally, right? Because it's like-minded people, but the interest could be anything, literally anything. And because I'm so interested in so many different things, I'm always seeking out communities that perhaps help me further explore that or allow me to meet like-minded people from whom I can, you know, learn new things, get inspired and share ideas. And I think that's really where it comes from for me. So, you know, being part of these professional bodies, they have communities. Mm-hmm. Future Art Scotland, which is the, you know, the meetup that I run with, you know, a couple of other kind of friends in the Agile community. All of these things are powerful constructs for kind of bringing humans together. And during the, you know, the pandemic, we were all kind of locked in our homes and couldn't get out, and all the things we took for granted had kind of just been taken from us. They were a bit of a lifeline. So in the future of work, we used to say, you know, we're doing these things to kind of keep the conversations going, keep us together. And I think it played a big part in supporting our mental health, frankly.
Yes, yes, I would agree. I was in my flat in central London at the time. I've moved since. For 89 days without being in contact with another soul in person, which is a bit weird. But threw myself into all kinds of stuff, including networks in Scotland and beyond that was helping out with online. So shared passions, the two things, one you mentioned future of work and the other is, I'd say, could be Scotland. So, when I did, move back to the UK, I'm still very connected to Scotland, even though I chose to base myself in London. And I was encouraged by some people to do a coming out of a conversation over dinner one night. We talked about this in 2017, and we thought, well, it was just post the Brexit vote, and we thought, okay, the Scottish government, the Scottish politics will get buried in Brexit and post Brexit for a number of years at that point, which it turned out to be the case. And my keyword's brave, and I've lived outside the UK most of my adult life, and I saw a real change in Scotland after devolution to to see people say, first of all, oh heck, we have to stand on our own 2 feet. And then it became, actually, we maybe can stand on our own 2 feet. And just the vibrancy and this kind of networking and the meetups that happen in Edinburgh a lot, they just weren't there 20 years ago. I mean, you know, it's a much more can-do spirit. In fact, there's a network called Can Do Scotland, which aggregates these communities. So for me, we ran this thing called Towards a Brave and Confident Scotland. And we got a diverse group of people, ages, backgrounds, whatever. And four of us each got four people. We had 20 people and I ran a workshop from it. And a whole bunch of them made connections and connect to this day on different things. Didn't go much further than that. But I'm very passionate about Scotland, you know, being brave and confident around that. And the second thing to me is that I'd love your take on, so riff on whatever you like, but I've just thrown some things at you. The second of two is the idea of future of work, because I joined the RSA in London. I mean, they have a very prominent chapter in Scotland as well. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'll be blunt. Part of the reason was it's a good place to meet people if you're in, and I live in central London and they have a facility there. But their idea around future of work is all about technology. And there's a dissonance between the people upstairs in the staff and the fellows, the members who meet, because we're all about humans and the future of work and what that means. So I know it's a both and technology can be an enabler. But for me, it's connecting people together and ideas and that work can be different that way. You know, so I don't know. I mean, there's nothing in there other than I'd love to hear from you about, you know, what you're about future of work and what you see can be enabled in the next phase, you know?
Yeah, you said a lot of stuff there, and yeah, we could probably talk for hours on this stuff, to be honest. Yeah, you're spot on, right? So the Future Work Scotland, so the whole point of that is, well, it's a global community. Originally, it started as a local Edinburgh-based meetup, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody used to go there, and you know, you had the geographical proximity, and you know, you went along if you lived, you know, in the Edinburgh area. But the point is, it was all about the ongoing evolution of work, how work is changing and all the different facets of that. Mm-hmm. And the sort of speakers we've had were some incredible thought leaders from around the globe, you know, talking about anything from, you know, typical things like, you know, the distributed nature of work and dispersed teams and how do you continue to collaborate effectively, right through to, you know, behavioral science and, you know, the application of artificial intelligence and the learning domain, and it goes on and on and on. I mean, check it out. You know, you can get us on Meetup. You look at some of the, we record all our sessions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can catch them on our YouTube channel, and you know, I'm some of my digital marketing skills to play in there. But you're right. It's fascinating, right? Because it continues to evolve, but it has become, I feel like COVID is kind of, I'd like to believe, maybe I'm wrong here, that COVID kind of brought us back to basics and kind of reminded us of, you know, the things that mattered and the things that didn't matter, what the essential things were. And I think, you know, suddenly in works, we were having different types of meetings to kind of make sure everyone was okay, and, you know, drop-ins and check-ins and, you know, creating team charters and things to make sure, you know, we were getting better at inclusivity and, you know, even doing a check-in at the start of a meeting. Those are the stuff we were really focused on heavily pre-COVID, I don't feel. I think that was a beneficial thing. But, you know, I'm also interested in something called social leadership, and I've just recently, you know, published an article on it in, you know, InfoQ, and which just went live the other week. You'll see a post on LinkedIn about it. But the point there really is it focuses a lot on the changing nature and style of leadership as well, right? And how leadership has had to change to look at the way organizations, you know, are changing, and they're changing because the communication landscape's changing. You know, the way communication's more sort of liberal, and how do you kind of make sense of all of it, and how do you filter out the noise versus what's of value? And it's an incredibly interesting space. I mean, all of it, and all these things are contributors to organizations being able to compete effectively in the marketplaces, and also being appealing to the next generations, for whom there is a very different social contract between employers and employees. So what they want, what they expect from their employers is very different to what you and I expected when we started our careers, or certainly our parents did, and things like, you know, jobs for life and careers for life, and you stayed in one place and then you retired and you got your pension. It's nothing like that now. You know, it's very different.
So what's social leadership?
So social leadership, you can go read my article.
Say what?
You can read my article.
I know, but just for the benefit of those listening to the podcast.
I'm joking. But social leadership is really a style of leadership which is there to help and create the leaders who will thrive now in what we call the social age. So the social age is kind of where we are now.
Okay.
It's moved on from the digital age. So it's really about everything I've just said, you know, the changing nature of communication and the way we all collaborate and the fact that there's so much noise. And again, back to technology, right? So technology is the enabler. But really, we're focused more on deriving meaning now. And social leadership really kind of supports that because we're much more focused on, you know, what our values are and what our principles are and being aligned with others who hold and share the same values and principles. Naturally, what the millennials, et cetera, are really focused on when they're looking for their future employers, right? All this stuff's a game changer. And social leaders are leaders who are good at this stuff and understand this stuff and are putting their sort of skills. And really, what social leaders are, they have high social capital. So they're basically very skillful and adept communicators.
Right.
So they know how to create the right narrative, and how to share those stories, and how to socialize those ideas for long-term sustainable success.
Yeah, totally agree. In fact, I'll do a deal with you. I'll read your article on social leadership, and I've got two articles in the footer of my website. One is called Are You Ready for Open Leadership? Which my constructs are very similar to yours. And the other is just about leading from purpose, where I've taken the triple bottom line and iterated it and gone from profit plus people plus planet as the triple bottom line to purpose plus people plus planet. And also almost Joseph Campbell-esque, I've got a spinning flywheel and profits at the bottom. Because actually, when people can recognize that a focus on purpose, people and planet and a discipline around the business will actually drive profit. But profit isn't the motivator.
Yeah.
Purpose is the motivator. And guess what? You attract in the right clients. You attract in the right people. And the in the drawing I have for that, it says scale, right? Because that allows you to scale your impact on society.
Brilliant.
So we're very aligned on these things. We're speaking slightly different language, but, and we'll tend to attract, you know, people who will listen to this will be tribes who actually and communities who actually get it, right? And I think that I'm thinking right now of, my client work is typically with individuals who are leaders with the opportunity to scale. They might be smaller businesses or they might be multinationals. And it's fascinating how really high up in, hierarchy, which is another dated term, multinational leaders are now turning around to me. One just the other week turned around and says, who should I be talking to? What network should I connect to? And they got to CEO of a listed company not really thinking about this. But actually naturally having the communications and leadership skills, otherwise they would not have got where they are. But now they're going, well, actually I need to, you know, really connect more what to them feels randomly. But you know, the key word that I on the call with them the other week that came up was just curiosity. Just be curious and good things happen. And that's social in the best sense of the social networking type world that we have online now and offline.
No, you're right. And yeah, I love it. I love what you're saying because I think you're right. We're absolutely aligned. And if you read my article, it's a flavor of a lot of the stuff you've just said.
Cool.
I suspect when I read your stuff, it'll be similar. And I think the important point you made there that really resonates with me is the fact that it's that old traditional style of hierarchical kind of structures and organizations that are changing and needing to change. And I think that's really what social leadership is about because it's an informal style of leadership. So it's, again, not mandated. It's not driven through, you know, position and authority that's granted. And that's really what my article talks about.
Right.
And it's fascinating stuff. The other thing you said earlier that I've just remembered, I wanted to come back to very briefly, because I know we're just kind of, we're blethering, as we say in Scotland, is you talked about brave.
Uh-huh.
So So I used to work for Visit Scotland some years ago. So I used to head up the digital delivery area there. It was part of the leadership team that really kind of started to focus on how it was adopting digital technology. So I'm going back some years now, but it was a much newer thing in the Scottish public sector. But Brave, obviously, the film came out, you know, Pixar's film, it's brilliant. I remember the amount of work that the organisation did to really use that as a marketing vehicle for Scotland. It was phenomenal. And you had Peter Lederer on.
What was he going to say?
So I didn't know him well. So Peter was kind of the outgoing kind of chair round about the time I kind of came into the org. And I think it was when I got my first sort of head of department role. So I knew him, but he wouldn't have really known me. But I remember the impact he had, and just he was just a really nice man.
He's a wonderful guy, and he's still in Edinburgh. Yeah.
But yeah, I was there for some years and loved it because, you know, marketing Scotland is a product. But all the thing to do. Especially when you love it, you know, when I'm at Hampden and, you know, singing the national anthem, it gets you right here.
Aye. I just, 2004, November 2004, there was a national tourism conference in Scotland. About a year before, I'd been booked in to be one of the speakers.
Right.
Okay, we'll have a keynote speaker from outside Scotland, Scottish tourism in the morning. Can you do that? And we'll have one in the afternoon. And in the interim, a hurricane hit the Cayman Islands and my house got destroyed and my family with a newborn baby had to be evacuated. So where did I take them? Scotland. So they were there. I was still in Cayman fixing stuff. And I thought, well, I've come across in November. I've got this thing up in Aviemore. So I drove up and what I loved about it, it was one of the worst presentations ever done because I got so passionate about it. I didn't even finish my slides and this kind of thing, right? But it was Scottish tourism, confident and world class. And I'd been working in tourism for about 15 years at that point internationally. And I went, you're not, but you could be, was my point. And you've got all of the assets, all the attributes to do that. And then you're never going to guess, seeing as we mentioned, you're from Leith, not Edinburgh. And I support, well, you know, the big club in Edinburgh, you know, but we'll leave that banter. And the afternoon speaker was the real keynote speaker, which was a gentleman called Sir Tom Farmer.
Yes.
And I paid me the biggest compliment possible because he got up there to the lectern. And for those who don't know, he's one of Scotland's most successful business people, very humble guy from Leith. And he bought the football club that to save it from bankruptcy that I support 25, 30 years ago. So this was 17 years ago, and he stood up at the lectern with tons and tons of notes and files and books and brochures and everything, slammed them down on the lectern, which of course made a huge noise through the microphone, right? And he said, and I'm not going to do his accent. He speaks in a broad North Edinburgh accent, friend. And he said, well, I spent weeks researching this speech because I love the topic. And then bloody McCallum just gave the speech I was going to give. So he then went on his speech about his story of that. And actually, since then, I met up with him a couple of days later in his office in Edinburgh. We've known each other ever since, which is great. But it goes back to confidence and bravery and there is a shared passion for what's a wonderful country. So, so I guess beyond anything we've been talking about, largely just agreeing with each other.
Yeah, it's great.
Sometimes it's just people from, because there's, you know, there's a quality, small and growing audience for this podcast every week, and they're all over the world. Right. So they can just listen to Edinburgh boys having a blether, you know.
I just wish we had a pint in our hand.
I'll try to get up sometime after the new year and COVID, everything's COVID allowing, you know.
Indeed.
We'll definitely do that sometime when I'm up. So.
So just quickly then, the other thing you kind of touched on, well, it kind of runs through a lot of what you're saying, which I feel really strongly about is, you know, we've talked about communities, we've talked about the various aspects of, you know, these styles of leadership we're now talking about that are emerging and are really relevant to the age we're in. But it's to me, the other thing about social leadership, it's the way we build relationships and make, you know, having meaningful relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really key. So I'm someone who, through a lot of these activities and voluntary roles that I've got, you know, I care a lot about building relationships, nurturing relationships, and really understanding where people are kind of coming from and understanding what matters to them and what's meaningful to them. And it's really important to me, and applies a lot in some of the stuff I do in my day job, because I'm building communities within my organization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an aspect of my role, and it's really important to do that, as you said earlier, you know, from a position, you know, making sure it's kind of, you know, purpose-led, again, mm-hmm. an idea I think a lot. So, yeah, we are incredibly aligned. It's astonishing.
Perhaps not. I don't know.
Feels that way.
Yeah, and, oh no, we are. It's just, it's not astonishing is what I meant. It's,
oh, right, okay.
But it's, I'm a big believer in, I was talking to a couple of youngsters in my life in London the other day about, they go, oh, it's luck. And I went, not a big fan of the word luck. I believe in, you create space for serendipity. You also can come across the people who, and this was around being late for a train, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a kid in London, they never like to arrive for the train platform more than 30 seconds in advance. All right. And so it seems like, and we were going somewhere and we ended up being really late because like trains were cancelled and all this kind of thing. He says, look, you just got your, it's from your Zemplanity bank. And they said, what the hell? And I went, well, Zemplanity is the opposite of serendipity. There are the people who create space for things to go wrong. So, you know, serendipity is creating space for things to go right. And, it's like a couple of years ago, I just went off to a conference called Basecamp London, mm-hmm. On short notice, because a pal of mine, Kay Scorer, who's been a guest on the show, was facilitating. And I said, oh, that sounds like fun. I wonder if they've got any space left. It was like a week out. And I went, okay, I'll go. All right. And at that one, I met Steve Chapman, Rob Poynton, and Alex Barker and a number of others who I'm still in touch with, and through thinking, oh, I'll just go to that. Some good things will happen if I just talk to these people who are community people from around the world trying to see if they could talk about the big questions the world needs to answer. And I went, I'll put a weekend into that. And it was great. And off the back of that, and I like also measuring connections. There's a guy, his name's escaping me right now, who's used to work in the fund industry business, and he got a bit frustrated when he retired back up to Edinburgh from London.
Mm.
But he became part of these expert networks where they pay like a grand of your time to answer a question for 10 minutes. But it's only the big institutional fund managers. And it's like that unfairness of opacity of information that I didn't really like. And he didn't either. And he started to get passionate about honoring connections and coming up with a way that you can track connections. So, you know, somebody who I'm sure you might have met is Sandy Kennedy, who ran Entrepreneurial Scotland from the foundation of it. He's probably the biggest connector in Scotland. He will connect everybody to everybody all the time. And so it's like the old 6 degrees of separation game. You can normally work that out very closely. And LinkedIn at its best is good for that. I'm not such a fan of making connections on LinkedIn very often because a lot of people are just trying to sell themselves or work the algorithm. And you and I met through that, which is magic. And generally, I actually find, and some people don't, they find it a place for negativity. I find the complete opposite. I hang out on Twitter all the time. Because I find I can make connections to people all the time through that. And they will actually dialogue. They'll actually message with you. They'll reply or chat. And then if you can, you'll meet in person or you'll do a Zoom call. That's a great combination.
They're the two social media channels I kind of reside on. The most, LinkedIn and Twitter, I largely have a very positive experience. I know that's not the case for everyone, but you're right. I really like LinkedIn for both, you know, the sharing of content and, again, building meaningful connections, right? And through that, we just got talking and, you know, we had a good dialogue and, you know, here we are, right? But the bit, you're right, the bit that does turn me off is I do also get a lot of people who kind of come on there and trying to kind of sell me something,
yeah.
And that's a real turn off for me. You know, if you want to come and, you know, Lair and me build some sort of meaningful relationship, do that first, right? And then perhaps, you know, you might have a better chance of selling me something. But, you know, if you kind of try to connect with me and, I accept the connection request in good faith, and then 5 seconds later, I'm getting this huge, you know, post with links to things and, you know, prices and, you know, can I do a quick demo for you? Really grinds my gears.
Yeah, I mean, two thoughts on that. Is one is really current for me is I did a little bit of work for a fast-growing startup. And I suggested to them in order to get to the next level, they're going to need to get some advisors on board to scale themselves and have the knowledge. And they said, well, would you do it? I said, okay. And then the next piece of advice was, you haven't got the time, the money, or the focus to put all the legals together for granting shares to people and stuff. So find people that know you and trust you, and find people that you know and trust, and get 3 or 4 of those advisors and just get them to do it on a one pager and a handshake for 6 to 12 months until you're ready to look at it. All right. And they went, what, you'll do that? I went, of course. I know you. I trust you. You trust me. You know, so
meaningful relationship.
And that's the thing. And you know, all if we take time to build relationships, good things happen from that. Just like if we focus on purpose and then we keep a discipline on the business, profit will follow and scale of impact to community will follow. So, I mean, these are some fundamentally simple things that we're both talking about. And I've just found in my, you know, you're a good bit younger than me, even if you've been around 20 plus years in the world of work. You know, they're still quite new to the conventions in business. And for me, it's where I sit is looking to change the system from the inside, because I love the purity that, or the language around things like social enterprise and third sector and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Right? But my question is, and how much impact will you have? Right. And you don't have to build a big business. You can have a microphone that people listen to. But make sure you're actually doing something that has an impact on your community. And that to me, I'm a businessman. It comes from the world of business as well as leadership. So I'm rambling away as happens. Let me let you wrap up and have the last word and what last thoughts you might have. And it's been an absolute pleasure, Seth.
No, I probably enjoyed it. Last words. I guess back to the hero's journey which we talked about earlier, I'd say, you know, go on the journey, you know, be open to, don't shy away from it, take the opportunities. You only regret what you didn't do or you didn't participate, and then you never know where it might lead. Right? And I think that's kind of what we've been talking about today. And when I am doing, you know, my mentoring and coaching and, you know, the various talks I've done over the course of the year, this sort of stuff comes up again and again and again, you know, just embrace the journey.
Embrace the journey. Beautiful words. And I definitely will take you up on that offer to meet you for a pint next time in Edinburgh. So
look forward.
Let's may this be the beginning of building a relationship.
It's good to be.
Cheers.